The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockler back with you for the last hour here of the George Show on 710 KNUS. I am broadcasting to you. I know it sounds like I'm right there in Denver with you to pre-celebrate the Avs win over the Tampa Bay Lightning, but instead I am in Tampa Bay. Interesting that I've made this selection. I don't know how it turned out this way, but I am broadcasting through the magic of what I believe to be microwaves and some sort of a string cup thing. To you from the Salem Studios in Tampa. And I told Billy this offline, maybe even online. Wonderful studios. Great folks out here. Super nice. They look like they have great personal hygiene. And the offices and the studios themselves, really top shelf stuff here. And Mike Gallagher broadcasts out of here. I missed him. I saw his car outside. And, of course, I tried to get into it. But he left before I could accost him and do the selfie thing that a fan would do. Listen, we have a VIP on the line right now. It's someone who has already been successful in a private sector career in oil and gas. They then thought, what can I do to make a difference in my community? Ran for and got elected to be mayor. And now it appears they've come off the rails entirely from a mental health standpoint and made the decision to jump into the political wood chipper that is the 8th Congressional District primary fight. Mayor Jan Coleman, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Jan, what's wrong with you? Why would you do this? This is perhaps the most competitive primary for the most competitive congressional seat in America.
Absolutely. And you know, George, because you've been there yourself. When you care enough that things are going so wrong and you know you can make a difference, you have to step up and do something.
So we're headed into the June 28th decision-making thing here, and it's you and three others that are on the ballot. I've seen you at a bunch of different events, as you know. When you're at this point of it, where some people have voted, many people hang on to their ballots, how do you get to people and convince them you're the choice over three other good Republicans?
Well, I think what we're seeing is people are tired of career politicians that just talk a lot and don't actually do anything. I'm an oil and gas engineer. I'm also the mayor for the city of Thornton, and I get things done. And so my whole entire plan has been to talk to every voter, earn every vote, and make sure that I'm out there. Like you said, you've seen me at many events, and I'm at many more that I don't get to see you at. And so that is my exact plan, is to talk to as many voters as I can as we try to take back the House this fall.
Can we talk a little bit about what Congresswoman Jan Coleman would have done with some of the issues that are front and center right now? One of them is we fully expect that sometime this month, before the Supreme Court takes its break at the end of its session here, they're going to issue an opinion that I think everybody believes is going to overturn Roe versus Wade and Casey versus Planned Parenthood. And so there's discussion now. It's supposed to go back to the states, but there's discussion at the federal level with the Dems in charge of trying to, and I think they even put this out there, to launch an abortion protection bill. I don't know what they called it, but to launch that bill. I presume that if the Republicans, and the Republicans will, take back the House and very likely the Senate, they'll offer an alternative bill that will be an abortion ban of a certain kind. So my question is, where would you come out on those? And the bigger question for me is, what role, if any, should the feds play in this abortion issue?
That's a great question. But you have to start out with the fact that I am pro-life. I'm a mom of two teenagers, two kids that I love and adore, even on my challenging days with them. And so I am absolutely pro-life. But one of the things I love about Colorado is that we love home rule. And I think what we're seeing with Roe v. Wade is an opportunity to bring it back to the state level, which is where it should have been the entire time. The closer we can get to people being able to talk to their elected officials on a daily basis to actually make policy decisions, the better off we are as citizens.
From a policy standpoint, and I know the language of the bill will dictate, but from a policy standpoint, then, even if a Republican bill was offered that would curtail, limit, ban, whatever word you want to choose, abortion in Congress, you would oppose it for the principle that you just espoused.
Absolutely. I think the states need to have control over it so that the people have more control over it.
Let's then move to another topic, and I want to ask you what role the Fed should play in this, and that is we've seen through Uvalde, Texas, we've seen out of Buffalo, New York, and right here, you've lived this with us, and that is we've had Columbine and Aurora and STEM and Boulder. We've had a ton of mass shootings now, and it's engendered this discussion that has resulted, at least on paper, in this bipartisan-ish agreement out of the Senate for certain gun, I don't know if they're calling them gun control measures, but you know what I'm talking about, Jen. What role should the feds play in this discussion of gun safety, gun violence, and where do you come down on these issues?
Well, and you know, in Colorado, we have had our share of tragedies, and what happened in Uvalde is horrible. And again, as a mom, it breaks my heart that those families went through something that they didn't have to go through. What we're looking at in Colorado especially is that every time something happens, whether it's in Colorado or across the country, Colorado adds another law to the books. And we don't see a significant change when those laws are added. So those laws are not working. So I think we have to actually find what the root cause is that's going towards these kind of outcomes. And I've watched for the last 2 years during COVID, with my kids in particular, being shut out of schools and not being able to see their friends and not being able to go out, that there is a mental health crisis in our community right now. And that is what is causing all sorts of outcries and actions that I think we can address just by looking at root cause instead of trying to work at symptoms.
Where would you come down on any federal effort to increase the age at which someone can purchase, say, a handgun or a semi-automatic rifle or whatever terms you want to use from 18 to 21?
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. You know, when we tell people they're old enough to drink at 21, but we tell them they're old enough to vote at 18. So I don't know if there's some magical number between 18 and 21 that makes decisions. I think really on the federal level, what we can do is support securing our schools more. I'm a big proponent of SROs in schools. I've done that as mayor. I did that when I was on the school board. And, you know, even in my personal life, I want my kids protected. And I know a big way of doing that is having protections in the schools themselves. So I think if we're focusing on mental health and protecting our schools through our SRO program, I think we get a better win than changing laws around anything related to gun measures that we know don't address the problem.
Would you then oppose an increase from 18 to 21 at the federal level? And it could be one because you're like, hey, I just don't think this is how this isn't going to solve anything for us. It could also be, once again, I'm committed to the idea that states need to be making these decisions or something else. What are your thoughts?
No, and it's definitely, I think the states do need to make the decision. I think the people need to be making these decisions. And the way to do that is through the state measures. But like I said, supporting SROs and supporting mental health is really what's going to solve this problem, not more laws on the books.
I want to keep the guns out of the hands of the bad guys and the folks who are definitely, dangerously mentally ill. And most of the mental illness advocates out there would remind you that a teeny tiny fraction of those who commit crimes with any weapons, let alone handguns, are mentally ill. But would you support an expanded background check? I've heard that term, Jan. I'm not sure what the hell expanded means, but would you? I mean, I don't know what they could expand into. I figured a background check was a background check, right? Would you support a universal background check for any type of transactions for firearms, whether it was private sales, gun shows, FFLs, all that other stuff?
Well, I think it's a complicated question because some of the areas that have had these incidents occur have stronger background checks in place, and it didn't matter because the people purchasing the guns legally still passed the background check. And when we talk mental illness, it's not always about a diagnosed mental illness that causes someone to do something. Sometimes it's as simple as just straight mental health, depression, anxiety, things that are masked easily and don't always get to a doctor. And so I think that's why we can't conflate the two. It's not guns versus mental health. It is to protect mental health, give people resources so that guns are not the outcry that we're seeing.
And this is me talking here too, Jane. I don't need you to commit to this unless you want to say, but I also think the other thing that we have been trying to do at the societal level for generations now is to somehow do away with the concept of good and evil. And there's evil out there. Okay, I've seen it for a career's worth of prosecution and criminal justice work. It is out there. And there is no law that can prevent evil. We can try to whittle it down and minimize its opportunities, but we're not going to legislate away evil. We're not going to redefine our way out of evil. And I think as long as that's there, there has to be some acknowledgement that we can't just stop the front end. We have to prepare for the back end. And that's when you're talking about making the schools a safer place and providing resources for armed. I think that's what you're talking about. But correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's exactly right. It is sad that there is evil in the world, but we can't legislate it out. And so instead, we put protections in place to make sure that our kids are safe and that people are getting support.
Let's shift gears now to what is it that you are talking about out there that Congresswoman Jan Coleman is going to do to try to address some of the other pressing problems in the country and certainly the ones in the 8th Congressional District?
The number one thing that I'm hearing at the door is actually the price of gas. The gas station down the street from my house is $4.89 a gallon. It's a ridiculous amount of money that people are having to pay every day just to get to their job. And as an oil and gas engineer, my job is actually to bring oil and gas to market. And I'm having a really hard time doing that based on the policies that are coming out of Washington. I can't get financing for drilling rigs. I can't get increased facilities in place because I can't get permits on federal lands. I can't get pipelines constructed. All of the things coming out of Washington are leading to this really high gas price. And nothing that we're seeing is fixing this problem. And wouldn't it be great for an oil and gas engineer that actually knows the technical reasons of how to fix this to go to Washington and teach others how to get this done the right way?
We're talking with Jan Coleman, mayor of Thornton, also a Republican candidate for the 8th Congressional District. You are in a unique position to answer this question and to talk about this because it turns out you know a little something about oil and gas. We have heard from the Biden administration that we've never had more permits. There are trillions of permits out there. Why isn't it enough to just issue permits?
And I love how the Biden administration likes to blame everyone but himself for the policies that are leading to this crisis that we're in right now. It doesn't matter how many permits there are if you are not allowing companies to invest in oil and gas development. If you're not approving permits on the surface, it's not just about the mineral leases that you have to get. You have to get surface permits as well. And you're not approving pipelines to move the product to market. It all has to work together because you take one piece of that out and you get the situation that we're in today.
The other thing that I've heard recently from some folks in oil and gas too is there is a concerted effort to tie up almost every single exploratory operation in the courtrooms with all of these different, you know, now the feds have greenlit this stuff, all of these different lawsuits and legal efforts to try to prevent the issuance of this or moving forward on that. What can Congress do about that?
Well, I think the big thing that we're seeing is the conversation from Washington is actually making it so you cannot get financial backing for oil and gas companies. And what's happening in the courtroom is just making that problem worse. What we have to see from Washington is support in all effort of energy in order to reduce the price. Because without all of it, we're going to end up with higher prices. We could potentially see rolling blackouts over the summer because there's just not enough energy available. Because there are not enough drilling rigs, because there are not enough people working out in the field, because there is not enough facilities to be able to bring the product to market. It is all tied together. And Washington can make it pretty easy by just allowing us to use the natural resources that we have available in this country that, by the way, are cleaner and better than the rest of the world. You know, it's a great opportunity, not just for America, but to also help other countries so that we can bring the prices down globally.
Let me ask you to prognosticate here. I fill up just like everybody else. I don't own a Tesla or anything. I did buy a hybrid because, you know, trees and stuff. But I still go to the pump. And every time I turn around to put the little pump back into its holder, I use some kind of expletive. And it's out loud. And I'm not the only one. You can see when people stop filling up their tanks because they turn and see the number and they're like, what the? It is incredible, the price of gas. We've never seen anything like it before in the history of the country. Where does it end? Like, if you had to guess right now, if Congress doesn't change hands and we don't start changing some of these decisions with oil and gas exploration and development and all that other stuff, what's the cost of gas at the end of the summer, by Labor Day? What are we looking at?
If nothing changes, I think we'll hit $6 gas pretty soon.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
that.
And I drive a hybrid as well because I actually love the technology. I think it's super cool, all the things that you can do to make cars more efficient. I love Teslas too because, again, technology is amazing. But, you know, the price of gas is not the only thing we have to worry about. Energy is how we survive as a country. And so the price of electricity is going up as well. The price of our goods is going up because the truck drivers that are bringing our goods to the grocery store have to pay more for their gas. So it is all tied together to the entire economy. If we get higher gas prices, everything goes up along with it.
Now, to be clear, you're right. President Biden has gone out of his way to say that the increase in fuel prices is due to Putin, and inflation is due to Putin, and very likely every other area in which his poll numbers are sub-zero, and he's getting close to it. I mean, his numbers are awful, especially in the state of Colorado. He's blaming on someone, not him. What can you do, or what can Congress do? Because the oil and gas thing can't be fixed with the flip of a switch. You know that. But on inflation, what can you do in Congress that's going to have a positive impact on this ridiculous inflation?
Well, the number one thing is to stop throwing money at every problem. Washington is budgeting by crisis. I'm used to managing capital budgets in my day job. I run the entire capital budget for my company. I run the budget for the city of Thornton, and I run my house budget. And so those are all things that I know how to stop spending in order to make sure that I can manage my budget. And Washington just has forgotten what that's like.
Can I ask you, if folks want to get a hold of you, they haven't made up their mind yet, they want to learn more about you, how do they do that?
Thanks. Yeah, I'm willing to talk to anyone anytime about any questions, and they can always find me at janforcolorado.com.
Now, Jan, I really hope we get a chance to speak with you again, but if not before the primary, regardless of how it turns out afterwards, I'd just love to get your sense of the campaign and where you think we're going into the general and all that other stuff.
Oh, sounds great.
Jan Coleman, mayor of Thornton, candidate for the 8th Congressional District on the Republican side of the ticket. You've got your ballot right. If you don't have your ballot right now, you need to call your clerk and recorder and figure out where it is. But you've got a chance to vote. You got to do it. This is the most competitive race in America. That's not just me saying it, Jan. You know, this is the Cook Political Report at the national level are saying the 8th CD is it, man. This is ground zero. This is the most competitive fight out there. So get a chance to go out and check out Jan Coleman's website. And then stay tuned with us. We're going to be back with another candidate here in just a little bit for a different race, a local House race. His name is Tony. He's a colonel. I served some time with him and his wife. When we come back, George Brockman on The George Show at 710 KNUS. George Brocker back with you here on 710 KNUS. Oh, man. Billy, you've now stumped me here from the 80s.
Yeah. Who is this? Come on. I challenged you off air.
No, you
did. Who is this?
I'm confessing my ignorance of this. This is, hold on, Salt and Pepper.
No. Oh, come on.
I don't know.
And the MC just said his name, too.
Oh, son of a gun.
Oh, man, I'm so disappointed in you.
Well, listen, I'm in Tampa, so I'm ahead. I'm in the future, which means
true.
I'm a little more tired. What's going on?
This is Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock.
Sweet goodness. I used to have that tattooed somewhere on me. Nonetheless,
I bet you have that fade haircut, too.
I used to do the kid and play haircut. You know,
oh, yeah.
The razor top.
That would look good on me.
Hey, listen, we have another VIP on here, someone to chat up. Again, we've got the ballots in the mail or on your counter. Hopefully you haven't tossed them. But if you haven't voted them yet, there is a race. It is the where I live, by the way. So this one matters to me a little more personally than some of the others. And joining us on the phone right now is a guy named Tony Hartsook. He had spent a career in service to the country in the military, retired as a lieutenant colonel. I will also say that everybody that knows him and his wife is convinced that she is far more impressive than he is. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, George. Thanks for the introduction. That was awesome.
Yeah, I feel fairly certain that if your wife were on the ballot, she'd have already won. But that she's not, so it's you. I get it. So we have to deal with it. Tony, you are in a...
She would have gotten 80 songs.
She probably would have. For those that don't know... Tony's wife is a full-bird colonel in the Colorado Army National Guard, also our state surgeon. Now, she's an oromaxillofacial surgeon, which means she loves to be called a dentist. So every time I get to do that, I call her a dentist. No offense to dentists, but they are very, very different things. Tony, tell us about where you're at now. You are in the dead sprint, right? Like if this were a track meet, you are a length away from this thing being over, and that's June the 28th. What in the heck are you doing, and what are you hearing out there? And maybe not just on your race, but in general, is the enthusiasm there from Republicans and unaffiliateds to participate in this primary, or are people like in a total shrug fest?
No, it is absolutely the opposite. They are very motivated, and it's across the board. You know, as I've been out walking neighborhoods, and actually I've been out Canterbury too, and Stonegate, and several other places throughout Parker, and without a doubt, as we go through the neighborhoods and we talk to people out there, and we listen to their questions and their concerns, first and foremost on their mind is the economy and inflation. People are strangling under the regulations and the taxes of both Polis and Biden at the gas pump, at the grocery store, and you know everything in between. They're also very frustrated with the education scenario. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you, if you hadn't jumped into the education thing, I was going to ask you, what is it that you think you're going to be able to pull off as a member of the House of Representatives at the state level on education? And I ask it from this position. There's increasing indications that the House, the control of the state House may be in play. But I'm going to take a conservative approach, lowercase c, and say, I think the Dems still hold on to it. I think they lose the Senate. That's going to happen. What can you do to impact education from your perch as a House member?
You know, so great. I mean, you got to hit the ball there, but yeah, perfect. Let's jump into that. And it's actually the same thing for all of the venues. You're right. I agree that we will take the Senate. The House is in play. I'll be surprised if we take it, but I think we can close that gap to where there'll be a one-person difference on the committees. So not only for the small businesses, but for education, these are things that are critically important to parents, and they want to see a change. What we have right now is Denver and the state capitol is driving their policies and their philosophies down to all the county levels. And we need to get the Colorado Department of Education out of county business and let the counties and the local municipalities run their school boards and do it what the parents want. And through that, we need to look at getting rid of this. You know, right now, we have so much politics involved in the curriculum and everything's being taught at schools. That is not the purpose of schools. Schools are supposed to be academic excellence, critical thinking and analysis, studying your core subjects of math and science, history, English, the core things that will help you succeed, whether you go on to college, whether you go to a trade school, which would be great to bring that emphasis back. I'd like to see that pushed into the high schools. I mean, when I went through high school, we had all kinds of trade schools, and you don't have that anymore. We need to get those out there for the people that don't want to go to college. And these are things that can be promoted and encouraged so where the local school boards will shift that focus and giving parents that parental choice in education. I mean, we use competition in everything. We use it in the business world. We use it in sports. We need the same competition in schools to where the kids and the teachers and everyone will rise to what that excellence, that bar of excellence is at.
Now, you came out of the military system where you know that it's designed to be a meritocracy. We've all seen people that have figured out a way to get promoted at least a couple times through things other than merit. But by and large, you know, you rise and fall based on your own performance. So I get that. I want to shift gears, though, and talk to you about something I talked to Mayor Jan Coleman about, who's a candidate for the 8th Congressional District. And that was the role of the state now in trying to address certain issues. Now, Jan had said, if you listen to that interview, that, hey, listen, Roe versus Wade gets overturned. I want that to go back to the states. Well, here in Colorado, the state has already spoken, and under the control of the Democrats, it's passed the most liberal, most extreme abortions until you're age 18. I think you can abort a baby up until they graduate from high school law in the state. But the other part was the guns part. Now, we've seen a bunch of massacres here. We have seen stuff explode at the national level with Buffalo and Uvalde, and it seems like there's a mass shooting every couple days somewhere in the country. The pressure will be put on this next legislature to try to address some gun, firearm, safety, school-type issues. What does a Representative Tony Hartsook do with those?
Thanks, George. As you well know from your military career, the first reports that come in when you're on the battlefield are almost always wrong. And I've done multiple combat tours, and when there's a firefight and you start getting reports, you have to wait until you see what are the actual statistics. Here, when it comes to school shootings, everyone talks about gun violence.
And I think they're missing some of the key issues. That word violence is what we need to address. We need to look at what is the root cause of violence, to include mental illness, the video games, the movies, the kids' exposure to growing up and seeing just violence everywhere in everything. When we do education for driver's training, we teach kids about vehicles. We teach them the safety. We teach them how to drive. We teach them about the laws so they don't have the fear of driving. We talk to them about you can't drink and drive, you can't do drugs and drive, you can't speed. There's a lot of things that come into the safety issue. We need to bring in hunter safety and weapon safety so kids understand what their safety. We also need to work to improve the relationship between law enforcement and the communities, and have where you have a community policing and a community relationship where kids and the law enforcement are working together with the parents and the families. So everyone is going through that. When I was a kid growing up, we had the local police in our schools all the time, just walk around talking to the kids. We knew who they were. We would see them. We would wave and say hi. They would come sit and eat lunch with us. We need to get back into this community policing where they're working with the community, working with the kids and the parents. And the other thing is there's non-intrusive means that we can use for threat detection. A lot of this technology is sitting out there that can work with existing schools and the cameras that can monitor where there's a threat detection system there and then notify whether it's a resource officer or someone who's on the school grounds that can take action that they deem appropriate. We need to make this a multifaceted approach. This zeroing in on weapons does not solve the conflict of the violence that's out there, the hatred that's out there, the mental illnesses. We have to address all of that. And I've had a lot of conversation with John and Maria Castillo, who have endorsed me because of my stance for school safety, because of my stance of looking at an all-inclusive system. We've had discussions with other people that are working on this. So I think we need to look at an all-inclusive system of these other non-intrusive means instead of just going after saying, oh, it's the guns problem. That's an inanimate object, and looking at the root cause. What are causing these kids to do this? That's what we need to address.
Let's talk about some specifics here. There is a disparity, I think, in the age in which you can do certain things. Like at age 21, you can buy a handgun, but not at 18. At 18, you can buy a rifle. And there has been a push to say, hey, because of the age and gender of most of these shooters, and by the way, they're almost all men, but based on the age, let's change the law to preclude, and we can always carve out exceptions for military service, but preclude 18-year-olds from being able to buy firearms of any type, at least until they're 21. Where would you come down on that at the state level?
You know, again, you look at, you mentioned it about the military. When we had the issue with, when you go back, you look at Vietnam, they were being drafted, they're going to war, and they couldn't drink, which was drinking age, obviously, is 21. We need a standard across the board. There needs to be open discussions about things. But again, you know, if you start saying a specific class is exempt or this class is what we're going to target, right now the government is carving people into classes by race, by sex, by religion, by everything else. We need to get away from that and get back to being Americans and working together, a community of working together and talking about the solutions going forward, not just that, hey, we're going to break this class out. We're going to say, you can't have these guns, or you can't go hunting. I've taken my son. We went through the hunter safety class. I took him through. My oldest has been out elk hunting with me, and it's a great family bonding time. We do a lot of sports shooting together. It's an Olympic sport. If we start restricting, saying kids can't compete, kids can't shoot, kids can't do this, then how do you work into the Olympics? How do you work to train them to go out and enjoy hunting and other things that are perfectly legal in the state? There's multifacets there.
Well, Tony, let me ask you then. And you talk about having the discussion. I appreciate that. And the hunting thing is legit. Colorado, despite the influx of people from places that don't do it, we are still pretty good hunting culture. It gets passed down from generation to generation. We can carve out that exception. But when it comes to a discussion about what you would do, and I'll give you the three options, you could increase all firearms purchases to 21, you could decrease all firearms purchases to 18, or you could leave the system in place that exists right now. What would you be inclined to do?
I appreciate you know, looking at those options, but that's not the total picture. We're not looking at the violence. That's what we're missing here. Everybody's talking about how do we restrict guns? And I'm saying, how do we teach kids responsibility? How do we reduce the violence? Everybody wants to target the guns, and that doesn't solve the root problem, which is the violence, the anger, the hatred, the frustration out there. That's what we need to address. And if you start carving out exceptions, then you get another side that's going to resent, well, why does that group get to do something and I don't get to? We need to get away from that of being excluding people and saying, you don't get to do this because you're a certain category, or you get to do this because you're in the military. We need to have uniform rules that apply across the board.
And how would you apply them? What uniform rule would you apply?
The uniform is just like, so here in Colorado currently, you can hunt big game. You can get your hunting license when you turn 12. You have to go through hunter safety, but you have to be 12 years old to go hunting, and you have to have an adult with you. So that's what I did with Harrison. Yet he can still carry his rifle. We can go out hunting, and I teach him the hunter safety, and I'm always there with him. He learns that discipline. He learns that responsibility and that self-respect. If you say, oh, we're not going to allow kids to do that until they're 18, then what happens to the hunting at 18? They're going to go off either to college, trade school, start their own life, join the military. You know, that whole thing changes. I don't think we should do that. We really shouldn't. We don't need to carve more niches in society. We need to bring society together.
Let's shift gears real quickly here with the time we have remaining to the economy, which I think by every poll I've seen is the number one thing that is haunting voters, and it's going to work to the benefit of Republicans even here in Colorado. What in the heck can and should the legislature do in the next session to address inflation that is higher than the national average? I mean, just gut-wrenching, wallet-busting inflation and the cost of fuel and gas in the state of Colorado. What does a Representative Hartsook do with those?
We need to roll back the restrictions, the regulations, the taxes, and the fees that have been placed on every small business and everyday families. They are being choked to death by these restrictions and these regulations. Small businesses, and you name the there's a plethora of laws that have been passed that every time I go out there and I talk to a small business, they now have to account for another tax or a fee or a dues that's going to the state. That does not help small businesses work in the community, hire people. We need to get rid of those. We need to reduce the taxes, reduce the fees, reduce the regulations of the government into people's lives. The government should be ensuring safety and security, not regulating everyday families and small businesses to where they can't exist. I mean, I know people that can't afford gas to get to work anymore because it's so expensive. That's insane.
Those feel like longer-term fixes, and I agree with the approach. Don't get me wrong. Is there something that the state can do in the short term that will help right now? And I'm not talking about the gimmicky polis legislature, let's scramble to make a win out of Tabor, which they continue to try to cripple but fail at the ballot box, and let's send everybody $500 of their own money back to coincide with their ballots. Not that kind of thing. What can or should the state do in the short term to have a more immediate impact on the very people you talk about who are being hurt by this?
I mean, let businesses run their business. I mean, the immediate, right now we have the states, the accountability, when I talk to businesses of what they have to pay in taxes, just needs to cease. They were used to paying taxes beforehand. And then with COVID and the additional fees that came with that, the PPE, the looming tax every time they go around there, the increase in gas taxes last year, the polis put in there. All of these things need to be reversed. These things can be eliminated. They never should have been implemented in the first place. This is what's strangling people, causing inflation. These are immediate causes. Can you flip that switch tomorrow? No. I mean, they could. Do I see polis and the Democrats doing it? Absolutely not. If we win the Senate and we force them to the table in the House, I absolutely think we can do that.
What are the in the couple minutes we have left, what's the last big thing that you would want to talk about to, when you're hearing on the campaign trail, hearing from people, what is the last big issue that you can think of that you would want to end this conversation with before folks go out there and make decisions about who to vote for?
You know, I'd like to tie it back. I mean, when you take that education and public safety, put them together. We have lost sight of how to work together as a community. Everybody is out there fighting because they are starving for their own little section, their own little way of survival. And we need to start pulling together as a community. We need to get rid of these breakdowns in classifications that the government tries to put everybody in their own little column and say, you know, you're this type of person. We need to get rid of that and work together as a community. And that ensures and promotes public safety. It increases the education and the self-awareness, the self-responsibility. This is a concept. This is a philosophical change. The government is not here to run our lives, although they're trying, but they shouldn't be doing that. We need to stand up and say, I'm responsible. I can run my life. I can work in the community. I can pay my taxes. Let me live. Let me run my business. Let us all work together and accomplish this. And those are what I hear from people. When I'm out there walking, they want to be left alone by the government. Every time they turn around, the government is doing something that is hurting them. The government just needs to simply stop doing half the crazy things it's doing and let people live and let people live together in harmony. I mean, Martin Luther King talked about it, and yet we continue to try to divide people, and we need to stop that. We absolutely must stop dividing people.
Tony, I wish I had time to ask you what's more on that list of the things government should stop doing, but I'm going to finish with this, and that is, do you trust the election system enough to trust the outcome of this primary election in June 28th and ultimately whatever happens in the general election in November?
I do. I mean, are there problems out there? Absolutely. But we have to have faith in the system, and we have to be vigilant about it, and we need to go forward. You know, we don't want to be blindly trusting. It's kind of like, you know, we trust, but we verify. Absolutely, we must verify. But if we lose faith in our system, then we lose faith in our country. And I think there's a lot of that that's being promoted. And I would say, let's pull together. Let's work as a team. I mean, you're from your military experience. I certainly did that in multiple combat. And one person doesn't survive. You survive as a team, or you fail as a team. But you have a much better chance of success if you work together as a team to do that. And that's where I think we absolutely need to be.
Tony Hartsook, tell folks how they can get to know more about you.
On my website, which is anthonyhartsook.com, has lots of information about me. It's got the policies and the issues that we're working on. It's got the endorsements, things about the family. We're out there, of course, walking the neighborhoods. I love coming and talking to people at their doors and hearing what they have to say and their questions and concerns. But again, that is anthonyhartsook.com, and that's H-A-R-T-S-O-O-K.
Tony, thanks for joining us on the radio here. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk with you after June the 28th, win or lose. Final comment is really for the full bird colonel in your home. I want to be a dentist. It's something every time I see her, I think of that.
What are you doing, Herbie?
I'm putting teeth on the dolls.
Putting teeth on the dolls.
I can't help it. Tony, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks, George. Enjoy Tampa.
Hey, yeah, thank you. Hey, listen, we'll be back for a last segment before I turn it over to Charlie Kirk, and then we go live and local with Stephen Tubbs from 3 to 7. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. Hey, we are back for the final few seconds of our segment live from Tampa Bay. My name is George Brockler. It still will be. I just won't be in tomorrow or Friday. It'll be John Caldera. I will rejoin you again next week from beautiful Cooperstown, New York. Billy, thanks for holding down the fort while I've been away here in Tampa. I think I'm coming home. I think I'm coming home. Thanks to all the guests that have been on here. Stay tuned for Charlie Kirk, then Stefan at 3. It's George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.